Hi everyone, welcome back to Makerspace, a podcast by Christian Education National. I'm Sam Burrows, and this week I'm speaking to Diane Hockridge. Diane is an Australian educational designer and researcher specialising in the design of online and distance theological education, with a particular interest in spiritual and holistic formation of students. She is currently the educational designer at Ridley College in Melbourne, and has a PhD in spiritual formation and online education. In this conversation, we discuss the challenges and opportunities of online education. We talk about authentic learning, service-based assessments, and reflective practices to foster student growth. We also explore the future of theological education, considering the role of new technology and AI. So enjoy my conversation with Diane. I'm very lucky today to be sitting in a conversation with Dr. Diane Hockridge. How are you?
I'm well, thanks, Sam. Great to be here.
Yeah, I think I'm really excited about talking about your work because you seem to have found a little bit of a niche, actually, where you're talking about something not many people have done actual research on. They might have a lot of ideas. But what's interesting about the online learning space, which is what we're going to talk about today, is that probably before 2020, it was a little bit niche. It was sort of a growing experimental place that schools and other organizations were looking into a little bit. There was kind of like this dual delivery thing going on. And then bang, COVID hit. And suddenly everyone had to kind of upskill really quickly. And so that means that your research has actually become in some ways front and center. I mean, when we're asking questions about what does it mean to educate when we're across a screen like this. So maybe to start, you might want to tell the story of how you got into this, how you got into studying your PhD, and what's the road that took you down this particular way of thinking?
Yeah. So yeah, it was an interesting road, I think, for me. So I suppose really a lot of theological colleges and schools jumped into the online learning, as you said, like kind of when COVID hit. But there were quite a few that were doing things beforehand. So really sort of from the early 2000s, I suppose. And then even before that, colleges were doing the old fashioned kind of distance or correspondence education. So it's been people thinking about how to do these things at a distance or online for a while. And so in the early 2000s, I was working in theological education. I was working for a theological consortium in Sydney at the time. And I kept hearing people in theological colleges sort of saying things like, well, you know, you just can't do spiritual formation online. You need a campus community for that kind of formation to happen. But at the same time, you know, online learning was really taking off around the world as we're all getting into the web-based technologies and so on. I ended up in this role where I was looking after what was then called the distance education stuff. And so I thought I need to learn more about this. So I went back to uni, did my master's in higher education in e-learning. And so I was exposed to all this, you know, educational theory and ideas about pedagogy and how you teach things online. And I was in this context where people were saying, well, you can't really do this stuff online. So I needed to do a research project as part of my master's. And I kind of thought, well, maybe I should look at the spiritual formation question. But then actually, frankly, I was a bit scared. I thought, that's a bit of a scary thing to tackle. I'm not sure I'm ready for that. So I started doing a project on something a bit more boring and manageable, looking at, I think it was quality in online learning or something. And in my first research seminar where I had to sort of present my thoughts, I started talking about the quality in online learning. And the lecturer, who wasn't a Christian guy, was just a university lecturer, he kind of listened and then he said, look, I don't know anything about theological education, but what's the issues that really get people going and, you know, what's really important for theological educators? And I said, well, it's how do you do spiritual formation online? And so he said, well, why aren't you researching that? And I thought, yeah, okay, I think that's what I should be doing. So that's how I sort of got into it.
Excellent. So, I mean, there's a lot of anecdotal stories that people tell and a lot of challenges that they have, but it's you've actually gone ahead and thought about this in a proper sense. So I guess a good place to start then would be maybe answering the question of what do we actually mean by formation? Because I think that's probably one of those words we think we know that what we all mean by that, but perhaps we don't. So strictly speaking, what do you mean when you're using that word formation?
I suppose, for me, I think about formation fairly holistically. I mean, basically, when we're talking about formation, I think we're talking about Christians being formed or shaped to become more like Jesus. It's that lifelong discipleship, growing in spiritual maturity. And you think about Bible verses like, Romans 8 being conformed to the image of God's Son, or 2 Corinthians 3, where it talks about, we contemplate God's glory and are transformed into his likeness through the work of the Spirit. And so, it's that sort of growth in spiritual maturity and becoming more like Jesus and that walk of discipleship. And that's, we often talk about spiritual formation, and that captures part of it. But I think, we also talk in theological education, I think it's the same in schools as well. We also talk about, ministry and pastoral formation, or leadership formation, or intellectual and academic formation. And so for me, when I've been thinking about these areas, I suppose I've been thinking about all of those different aspects, because, our walk with Jesus and our walk of transformation is holistic. It's about all parts of us, about, the head, heart, hands, as people like to say.
Excellent. Okay, so I think a lot of people can maybe get a little bit narrow about this and think, oh, it can't happen because it's not face to face. It's the words that are thrown around, the words like disembodied, for example. I guess what have you learned about digital spaces that actually can support formation in this holistic way that you're talking about?
Yeah, well, I suppose just sort of picking up that idea of how does it happen, going back to that thought about, well, what actually is formation? God's at work in us as well as us being at work, and the Spirit is working. So whenever we think about formation, we need to think about it from that point of view, that it's a sort of like a joint project, I suppose, in some ways. And I think sometimes when you're thinking about it educationally, it's easier to sort of go, okay, well, how do I make this formation thing happen? How can I do it in the classroom or in my college or something? And we just need to keep in mind all the time that the Spirit's at work. And another thing I think about too is, I read this article quite a few years ago, by a guy called Ben Forrest, and he was talking about, do you know what? The Apostle Paul was a distance educator. So, he wrote most of his letters either from a distance, from where the people were, or from prison even. And all those letters, made a big difference for those people, and are still making a difference for us today. And so, the thought that God's involved, is a very comforting thought, for me, I think. So I don't know whether I actually answered the question you asked there, but
No, but I think you've raised a really good point, which is perhaps we have a theology where we're maybe more important than we actually are, in the process of formation. Like, this is actually not our project. We're just involved in what God's doing, and it's a reorientation of, I guess, the place of the teacher in that. And it's a really fascinating way of putting it, of Paul being a distance educator. Absolutely. And there's a certain element where he had to trust these communities to work it out together, and that the Spirit is involved, and it doesn't all rest on his shoulders. I think that's something actually really important for a teacher to bear in mind. It's good. So your research, just to get into the nuts and bolts of this, identifies a whole bunch of principles, which help with holistic formation. If we could just maybe chat about one or two of those, what do you see is really key for someone who is perhaps working in a school, and they're doing distance education, or they're working for a tertiary provider, and distance is kind of like the modus operandi for a lot of educators in that space. What are one or two principles you could say, hey, look, we understand that you're limited in some ways, but if you can do these two or three things, you're probably doing this really well. What would they be?
I mean,
If
it
you
is
can
hard.
narrow them down, but
It is hard to pick two or three. But yeah, so with the research I did, we were sort of really getting into the online learning at Ridley College, where I'm mostly work. And we develop these online courses. So I say we, this is me working with other lecturers and faculty at Ridley College, develop these online courses, and the students took them, and then we asked students, okay, what did you find was formational out of that experience? And so that was sort of like the basis of the research. We also asked the educators their perspectives as well, and out of that developed these sort of design principles. I think for me, one of the things that really stood out strongly was people saying it's the exposure to different perspectives that can be really formative. And I suppose you kind of know that as a teacher, and in theological colleges in particularly, people come in and they've got their Christian background and wherever they've come from, and they're all at different levels of maturity and so on. But one of the really challenging things about theological education is realizing that actually not everybody thinks the same, not all scholars agree, not all Christians agree, and how do you come to terms with that? And beyond that challenge as well, just the benefit of being exposed to different people, which happens a lot in online education. You get a much more diverse bunch of students. You might get people who are, overseas. You might get a mum with small children who can't come onto campus, or somebody in a remote rural area, or an old person, or whatever it is. And so students really appreciated that experience of engaging with those different perspectives. And I think we do need to sort of try and help that to happen in a positive and helpful way, and not just sort of, let people just go off and talk with each other and then not sort of follow up on some of the issues that arise. But there's lots of ways you can do that in online courses. You can get, people to read different things from different perspectives. You can invite different people in as guest lecturers. You can have discussions. You can listen to podcasts, whatever it is.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me think back to certain moments where I taught an education and theology course to education undergrads back in New Zealand, and some of the concepts you deal with can really shake people's worlds up, and they sort of they are exposed to these new ideas, and it's not just a, oh, that's interesting. It's a, hang on, one of the things that I really based my entire life on is now feeling shaky, and it's quite jarring. Well, that's a mild way of putting it. And so I wondered, in those moments of crisis, because when you study theology, you are going through often big things of, oh my gosh, a massive assumption about life or God that I once had is maybe not a given. How do you often support students that sort of go through that kind of thing?
Like I was saying, it is important to do that and to sort of give people a safe space for doing that, I suppose. And that's where the sort of relational, personal parts come in, that an online course isn't just sort of like, you go off by yourself and read this stuff. You need to have somebody who's guiding you through that, who you can talk with about it. And so, with our online students at Ridley, not only do we have the lecturer and the tutor who's doing that kind of thing, but we also try and encourage students to have people in their own context who are supportive, who they can talk with and pray with and discuss those kinds of things. And then, and then sort of working through them as a class, whether that's like in a virtual class or an online discussion forum. Helping students to sort of like come to grips with those issues and support them in that.
Okay. Well, that's sort of, you were beginning to touch on something that some of the language that you use in your research is talking about learner ecologies. So we started to obviously get into this, but I think maybe one of the mistakes we make as online educators is, oh, I have to provide everything. I have to give the support, all the content, all that kind of stuff. And you're actually saying, no, actually, part of this could be leveraging the learner ecology, basically the context that these learners are already in. So would you be able to talk specifically about that?
I think it's really important to be thinking about, and this is connected with that question of embodiedness as well. So, we have this assumption somehow that online learners are disembodied in some way, or so kind of just virtual people or something, which of course isn't true, because we're all embodied in some way. And so the learners are always in a context. And so thinking about what is that context that they're in, their church context, you know, their home context, their family, whatever it is. And then thinking about how can we use what's in that context to support them. That's the sort of learning ecology idea, and to sort of extend their learning through that learning ecology. It comes that words, from my perspective, they come from a couple of people in the US who have been thinking a lot about spiritual formation on online learning. So Stephen and Mary Lowe, they've published a few things in this area, and a book about learning ecologies. And so, yeah, so that sort of idea of trying to sort of build those connections in the that with students in the context, and sort of push the learning out into the context, and help them to think about how they can build those skills, is that idea. Yeah.
Hey, great. So another one of the I guess the key phrases that you have been using is this phrase authentic learning. You've got this idea that, the way I read it at least is the way that a lot of this gets embedded the best is through experiences of authentic learning. So just wondering if you could give a couple of concrete examples of what these look like. So for someone like me who does teach online, what might I be able to do to encourage these authentic learning experiences to occur?
Yeah. So, listeners will probably know that authentic learning is, you know, the learning in a real context. So that has a deeper experience often for students, because it's something that they're engaging in real life. It's not just something that they're writing on a piece of paper or thinking about. They're having to sort of put some things into practice, and so that can be really helpful. And again, that's an area that people sort of say, well, you can't really do that online. But yeah, if you've got that perspective, that learning ecology perspective, you can be thinking about that. So I suppose an example of it comes from, we have some courses called guided spiritual formation courses, in our Ridley degrees and programs. And I really want to acknowledge my colleague Graham Stanton in this. He's really been the main contributor to this course and came up with lots of ideas for authentic learning tasks. But one of the things that I think works pretty well, in the last section of this guided spiritual formation course, the students are focusing on serving. What does it mean to be a servant of God? What does that mean for who we are as Christians? How can I be serving others? And so what we get them to do, and these are all online students, we get them to engage in acts of service in their context. We say, can you think of three different ways you can serve this semester? We want you to pick something that's secret. You're going to serve somebody in secret. We want you to pick something that sort of plays to your strengths, that you can keep growing in. And one that also stretches you and develops your weaknesses. And so they engage in those things, and but they also have to choose a group of at least three people in their local Christian community who are going to give them feedback on that. So a leader from their Christian community, someone they work alongside, and someone they're sort of ministering to. And then we get them to keep a journal and so on. And we also put them in small groups with their peers in the online course. And regularly throughout the course, they spend time with that small group, reflecting on what they're learning, sharing their experiences of what it, you know, what it's like to serve, the things they're learning about themselves from, you know, doing the secret service or trying something that's difficult for them or something. And then at the end of the semester, they have to write a reflective report about that, reflecting on things out of their journal, things that their feedback group has said, things that they've discussed in their small group, and so on. And the reflection reports that we do is we're not really assessing them about, you know, how they think they went in terms of their service tasks or how they're feeling about things. So we're trying to assess them on their sort of capacity for thoughtful reflection, and applying the sort of action reflection model, because we feel like that's, if we build those skills of active reflection, and reflection on practice, that's a real thing that you can take with you that sort of shapes and forms you and can be a useful tool for your formation in the future. So that's an example of one way we do things.
I love it. So, I mean, you're as much as possible basically driving it into the real world and saying, yeah, we do this part online, but let's make sure that everything else is, with real people, in your communities and actually, measurable in some sense of making a difference in the world.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, great. Well, I wonder then, just looking forward, I mean, we've seen from the early 2000s this gradual picking up of diversification of delivery and involving the online space, and then this massive surge through COVID. And then we're in a space now where people are, I guess, a lot more feeling a lot more free to have online schools or at least online campuses, that kind of thing. I'm wondering, where do you think the future of theological education is heading in this regard? Because we've come from a tradition where you've got many Bible colleges had like residential wings to it, where people stayed on site, and some still do. But that really is not as common as it used to be. So there used to be this highly communal space, and then it moved to like the standard, I guess, university model where you'd come in for lectures and you do assignments. And now it's very much moving into a space where in-person lectures are sort of increasingly optional, and even it's only viable when you do deliver online. So I guess the whole teacher-student relationship has changed a lot. How much do we pull from that trajectory, and where do you think this is going, and what do you think we need to be thinking about as things move on?
It's a good question, and things certainly are changing, aren't they? I think COVID did make a difference. Like, it's been happening for a long time, but since COVID, people are really seeing the difference of people going, well, actually, I want to do this more flexibly. There's sort of that expectation across all sort of forms of particularly higher education. I know it's a bit different with schools. So I think the online and flexible learning is only going to sort of continue and be part of the way that education happens in the future. We do have a lot more technologies available to us now that work really well. And I'm sure there's going to be more that we haven't even thought of in the future as well. I think maybe at this point I sort of do a bit of a shameless plug for educational institutions having learning designers and sort of online pedagogy specialists to help people think through those questions. Because, it's not necessarily straightforward to go from teaching in a classroom to teaching online. And so having somebody who can work alongside people and think through the issues. And I suppose it's that idea of intentionality. A big part of any kind of design is intentionality. We can think just about the design of simple household items. You might like think about the design of a jug for pouring water or, a tap or something. And, when things are badly designed, it's like really frustrating. So I've got this jug in my cupboard, but it just doesn't pour properly. When I try and pour something out of it, it either all runs down the side or it all comes out in a big kind of sploosh. What's the point of that? What's the point of having a jug that doesn't really work? Or, there's sometimes you have a sink and the tap is positioned so you can't put your hands under it properly. Like, who designed that? So I kind of think, you think about those kinds of things in teaching and learning as well. Like, people say, being on campus, being together with other people, and of course that's really important and it's really valuable, and you can do a lot kind of faster and in a kind of an easy way when you are together face to face. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the kind of formation that we want to happen is happening just because students are hanging out on campus or something. You still need to sort of be intentional about the kinds of things that you want to achieve. And so I think, that idea of intentionality, and I think schools and colleges really need to think about, well, we all talk about formation, but what are we actually talking about? What do we mean? What do we want to achieve? And then how can we do that? And then start thinking about, well, how do we do that in these different contexts? Because If I can't have a conversation with somebody face to face, how else could I connect with them? How else could I encourage them in their growth?
I mean, that's a really good point, isn't it? Just, I think people can often be like, well, we're meeting in person, so we're doing it more properly than people that aren't. Well, actually, I think perhaps this is forcing a good conversation about what does it mean to genuinely learn, to genuinely be formed. And this is good. So we can't just assume that in person is doing the job. So it's good. I guess in your role, there's always new technologies coming out that you have to be reckoned with. Maybe it'd be nice to just quickly hear about this, I mean, this is a massive topic, and I did not pre-warn you about this, so feel free to say no.
Think I know what you're going to say.
I know that you know that I'm going to say. How are you sitting with AI at the moment? And again, where is that going? And I'm really interested to hear it for the future of theological education. Writing essays, wrestling with ideas, having an AI help is a massive, massive advantage. But what are your thoughts all around that?
Well, I have been doing a lot of thinking about that, as I'm sure lots of people have as well, because it's a massive disruption. I'm also doing some research in this area too, so stay tuned. Talking with Australian and New Zealand theological educators about, well, how do we respond to this and what kind of approaches could be used and pedagogies and assessments and so on. So trying to gather some thoughts on that, which is really interesting. But yeah, I think a conversation I was having recently with some colleagues was about how theological education is a very sort of text-based discipline. And our standard ways of assessing people have been written assignments and essays. And so, AI really raises questions for us about that. So there's a lot of thinking, conversation going on about how do you assess people, but I think this whole area is also caught up with the topic of formation, and kind of that's how I think it's helpful to frame it. So, how do we use AI in ways that are going to help us to kind of flourish? How do we use it in ways that will help others? And how do we not use it in the ways that aren't helpful? How do we, students could potentially use it for cheating, or to take shortcuts or to get quick answers or something like that. But I'm hoping that we can talk with students and say, is that really what you're wanting to do here? I suppose realistically, people are pressured for time. Particularly the higher education context does put a lot of pressure on people. There are assignments due, so people take shortcuts. So institutions have to think about how to manage that. But I think also it gets back to the stuff we were talking about earlier about some of those more sort of authentic ways of learning. They are not open to cheating with AI so much when you're talking with people face to face, or when you're interviewing somebody or serving somebody in secret and then reflecting on that. Those kinds of things are a little bit more AI proof.
So are you saying there's a possibility, an assessment that might diversify quite a lot, that we might not be as text heavy when we are assessing someone's thinking on a particular subject?
Yeah, I think that's one way that it could go. I think the challenge for educational institutions, though, is the things I've been talking and reading about has been that how do you assure learning? And so there's a lot of conversations going on about, well, we need to go back to invigilated exams so we can be sure that the student's actually doing this stuff. So maybe even handwritten exams. I'm not sure how that would work. I don't know about you, but I can hardly write with my pen anymore. Or oral tests of some sort where, vivas and oral exams and conversations. So I suppose I'm kind of hoping more for the oral thing than the invigilated thing. Although I do recognise that actually oral assessments can be extremely scary for people as well.
Oh, so can exams. I mean, this is the thing, is
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Every assessment type really works for some people and not for others. And so we're having to think that through all the time anyway, aren't
Yeah, we are. That's right.
we? Oh, that's fascinating. Okay, so when might we expect to see something from you that we can get our hands on and read about this area?
Maybe sometime next year. Yeah. So I'm working with a colleague, Ian Hussey, from Malling Theological College on this project at the moment. We're just sort of starting to interview people. So maybe sometime next year.
Oh, great. That's so interesting. Okay, well, that's probably all we've got time for today. But just to say that we, yeah, really appreciate your work and that you've devoted so much care and attention to this area, especially thinking through spiritual formation for the theological colleges and for Christian institutions. Just maybe just one final question. If you've got a teacher listening to this, or maybe a teaching and learning leader who's realizing that they need to cater for kids that are maybe quite plugged in online, or they've got other kids that aren't coming into school that are online, what might be one thing that you could leave them with to say, hey, just keep this in mind in order to maybe think about formation in a productive way?
Look, I think I suppose, really at fundamental level, it's that thing about seeing the student as a person, as a whole person, and thinking about formation in terms of, that lifelong journey of growth. And then, there isn't one kind of, magic thing that we can do, but thinking about how we can be good examples ourselves, and how we can support students in their own growth in lots of different ways. Whether it's through praying with and for them, or whether it's through helping them to develop those reflective practice skills, or doing things that expose them to different perspectives and help them to think things through, or giving them authentic assignments, try lots of different things and use lots of different things. So in all the things they're doing, the learning is always coming back to who am I as a disciple of Jesus, and how am I living for him in this world, and how can I help others to do that?
Sort of, I mean, it's all new, but it's all very old, isn't it? It's very
Yeah.
much like that Augustine quote, like the first curriculum is the teacher, and nothing has changed in that respect. So, from what I'm hearing from you, is you are protecting that aspect of teaching and learning. Like there is something being shared by two human beings, and we need to make sure that that gets protected, even if the tools change.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Okay, well, thank you so much for your time, Diane. It's great to be in conversation with you and for people to hear what you're up to and to have their thoughts developed through what you're doing. So thanks heaps.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. It's been great to talk with you.
Thanks for joining. If you're keen to keep learning and accessing more of CEN's resources, why not subscribe to the Christian Teachers Journal, a publication of the National Institute for Christian Education, the postgraduate arm of CEN. Go to CEN's website, which is in the show notes, and under publications, you can take out an annual subscription to CTJ and receive your own copy of the four editions. From time to time, you might even find some writing from our podcast guests. See you next time.